Yeah, I don't know if I was on the air or not, so we'll find out later, I'm sure. I was just talking about the video that has been produced and is highlighting the fact that Sarah Spain and Julie DeCaro, like many women who are in the media or high profile, often endure the assault of really horrible threats online, harassment, unkind, the most unkind words that you could possibly hurl at any human being. When you saw this video, what were your thoughts?
You know, I thought a couple of different things. One, I thought, I mean, I cringed. I just cringed because I've been there and I've heard those things. I've had them directed at me. I've seen other women have to take them too. And it's, I cringe because it is so widespread. You know, but I also, you know, in a way I was a little bit relieved because I saw so many people talking about this topic today. But then on the other side of that, then I was almost a little disappointed that why do we have to make a video about why, like, we've been talking about this for a couple of years. Why do we have to go this far to actually, you know, read these tweets for people to realize just how bad it is? So I had really mixed emotions, but overall I think it's positive because it is shining light on a really dire and awful situation. Internet culture, at best, the default language is snark, and at worst, it's violent and it's scary, and people are opting out or censoring themselves from the public dialogue and leaving it really just to kind of the loudest and the meanest. And so overall, I think it's really positive that so many people are having thoughtful conversations about this topic today.
And when you say that it's driving people out of you know, speaking their minds, whether it's, you know, in the media, you know, journalists or politicians, I got a message from someone today who said there was a woman running a trucking company and she was getting so much harassment from her peers that she's folding her company because whether it was on media or personal attacks, I don't understand how this is acceptable. What was that? Is that, I think we're losing Amy Guth. Hey, Craig, are you around? All right. We've got some weird stuff going
How's
on
that?
at the station. Are you back?
Yeah, how's that? I'm just not
That's
going to do
better.
the earbuds. I'm just going to straight up do my phone the old-fashioned way. How about that?
I'm the same way. Do you have a tough time putting a phone to your ear now? Because I am always on the Bluetooth.
Yeah, I have like the little earbuds with a microphone on them, and anyway, I digress.
It's all good. No, it is a shame, and it's not just, you know, it's not just isolated with people in the public eye. I think this is happening with more, you know, occurrences in different professional arenas or just personal
Certainly.
ones where people use the internet to attack somebody, to pile on, to, you know, just use language, and as the video shows, to say things online that they wouldn't say to your face.
Absolutely. Absolutely. More and more we're seeing that. You know, we're seeing examples of people that are, you know, being open about issues online and even just on their social media who are not necessarily that high profile, but getting trolled terribly. You know, I really do believe that showing vulnerability and humanity and being very human is what is going to eventually turn the tide and fix internet culture. But in the meantime, doing so usually gets you trolled at best. You know, it usually can put you in harm's way. And so I think that's really dangerous. And you know, sometimes we see experts and public intellectuals saying, you know what, I'm never doing TV again. I'm never going on the radio again. I'm never going to write an op-ed again. I'm just going to stay in academia or in my company or whatever. And if the message gets out, it gets out. And that's not fair because everyone has the right to use whatever social media platform they choose with the expectation of safety. And that's really, you know, the big issue for me because if you take the 30,000 foot look at this, then really just the loudest and the meanest are going to be controlling the public narrative and thus writing history. And that's really a problem. And we've seen for, you know, decades, we've seen longer than that, for years and years and years, we've seen the problem with having a single narrative and just letting the, you know, majority control the right history, more or less. So it's got bigger implications, and I think there's got to be a lot that needs to happen before we can fix it. I think there's a cultural piece that's certainly the biggest and the hardest to change, but then there's a law enforcement piece, there's a legislative piece, there's, you know, there's an educational piece, I think there's a responsibility of the tech giants to do some of this work too, and I think that leads to their to their not very diverse hiring practices. It's very difficult to be sensitive to the plight of others if you, you know, if you yourself are not, you know, if you're surrounded in by a really homogenous culture. I was talking about this earlier today with Ro Khan on his show, that I, you know, I think there are bigger implications of Silicon Valley having a more diverse workforce, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because I think it's going to help us, you know, fix some larger issues that are really quite dangerous.
Well, when you say cultural, you know, issues that we have to address, because I, you know, and I'm such a TV hound. I watch so much television. I don't know if you watched O.J. Simpson trial, because you were mentioning it's been going on for decades. This sort of focus on what it means to be a woman in the public eye. When the case was going down, when Marcia Clark was arguing, when she was prosecuting, I do remember all of that, like thinking, oh, does she have to dress that way? And why did she do that to her hair? The things that we focused on, and you forget this human being who had a very important job, who had, you know, it was her job to make sure that the people or the person responsible for murdering two human beings went to jail. And here we were like, what did she do to her hair? And that was even before we were all tweeting. Can you imagine?
Right. Well, and here we are still doing the same, as we have a woman running for the highest office in the country. And all we can talk about is her pantsuits and whether or not she's smiling. And we're talking about putting a woman who saved hundreds, if not thousands, of lives on the $20 bill. And all we can talk about is that she looks grumpy. Like, we're still doing this. But in fact, it's been going on way, way, way before Marcia Clark. If we look at even some of the narratives around the witch trials and witch hysteria in Salem, way, way back when, if we look at the way people talked about suffragists in that movement, it's so much the same that it's disappointing. It's scary because it makes me think that it's so ingrained in such a systemic way that it's going to be darn near impossible to fix. But I don't think it will be totally impossible to fix, which is why I'm working on it. But it is, you know, it is disheartening because I do think it's so ingrained in us, so very ingrained, this like victim blaming shame culture of, you know, when a woman has been trolled, when she has been victimized by, you know, the public in some way on social media or some other platform, it's really about just ignore it or, you know, don't feed the trolls. And the onus becomes on, you know, it gets put on her to change her behavior rather than have the conversation focus on the problem itself. And I mean, I was just talking about this last week when the app that is like the Uber for women came out, that I was like, that's fine that there are options, but I don't agree with it because this to me is like putting tape on a wall. Because we're not fixing the problem of not, you know, not thoroughly screening the people who are driving us around and not addressing the issue of men who are committing crimes against women. We're just saying, hey, women, go over here for your own private Uber. And that's not fixing it. That's just kind of putting a Band-Aid on it. And I think this is much the same thing. If we're saying, well, just opt out and don't be on social media if you can't handle that, you're essentially saying, hey, all men are this way and rude and vile and violent, and if you can't hang, just don't be on Twitter, and that's not fair. And it's certainly sending a very dangerous message to young people, I think especially young women, who were essentially saying, hey, you cannot trust any man, you just have to, you know, go away if you can't handle, you know, normative, you know, very dangerous behavior. And I think that's really problematic. And so that's why we really need to address the problem head on rather than just kind of putting Band-Aids around it or decorating it or, you know, just pretending it's not there and focusing on the wrong thing.
Well, and for the people who think that language and the things that we say don't matter, you know, I mean, we can just look at what happened last week with Andrew Shaw and the fact that the NHL and the Blackhawks organization said, look, this is not who we are. Andrew Shaw stood in front of those microphones and said, this is not who I want to be. Mm-hmm. And yet when people use language like that and you say, hey, that hurt my feelings, people get so defensive. They get angry and basically say, I want to say whatever I want. I should be able to, it's a freedom of speech. And my husband had a great comparison for this. He said it would be like if someone was stepping on your foot, if they just didn't realize they were standing on you, and you said, excuse me, you're standing on my foot, you're hurting me, and they went, screw you, I can stand wherever I want. It would be the same thing. I know you didn't, I'm not telling you you're a horrible human being, but this little thing that you're doing is actually causing me pain. So could you please just move? And instead, people are taking it personally. They are getting more, it actually seems to activate more aggression when we ask someone to please be kind.
Absolutely.
I still I can't understand where the desire for kindness elicits outrageously aggressive behavior.
I know, but it does. I mean, just this evening, I posted, I was on CBS News earlier this evening talking about that video and my documentary project and giving an overview of online harassment generally, and was getting trolled in the comments section by somebody that I actually know. And the more I insisted, hey, we can have a dialogue, but you need to be respectful and not insult me, the meaner it got. I was like, well, okay, you're proving my point exactly of why this is very necessary. But, you know, I think we often get tangled up in this issue as soon as someone says, hey, I have the right to do anything I want. And so that's why I really love the comparison to stomping on someone's foot that your husband made. Because with right comes responsibility, and that's the part we don't pay enough attention to. We don't talk about responsibility or consequences nearly enough, when really that's where we really need to be putting the focus. Of course you have the right to call me horrible things online. Doesn't make it the right thing to do, nor should you be absolved of responsibility, especially if those things are threatening. I mean, we're seeing cases of not just women, but primarily women, being diagnosed with PTSD after particularly dangerous and violent and graphic episodes of trolling, particularly when it's a large group of people kind of ganging up together on her. That's real. That's a very real consequence. And someone should be held accountable for doing that. You can't just say horrible things to people. You can't just threaten their lives or their safety without consequence. If you walked with me on the sidewalk and said you were going to, you know, hurt me, you would be held responsible, and the same should apply online.
I agree, and it is astounding to me that people, you know, when they say it's a First Amendment right, the
yeah.
First Amendment doesn't say, you know, say whatever you want without any consequences or accountability.
Right.
It says that you will not be censored. Amy Guth and Patty Vasquez, Sarah Spain, Jalita Carroll, none of us have the ability to censor you, but you better believe we're going to respond. And
yeah.
we're going to keep trying to show up. I had a question about that video too, because one of the things that I wanted, you know, as a target of these kinds of tweets and texts and posts, part of me, I mean, these were guys who felt really bad reading these tweets to
mm-hmm.
the women. These were not guys that actually wrote them. Part of me kind of, and I'm a vengeful person, I guess. You know that I have called texters who have said
yeah.
horrible things, because we do have your phone number.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish it had been the actual texters. But I, you know, I don't know how you track down those, you know, those Twitter accounts and go, hey, you said this thing. I would love to show up on their doorstep and be like, hey, remember when you told Julie DeCaro you wished she was going to be Bill Cosby's next victim? We would love for you to say that to her face. We want the whole country to see the man who tweeted that.
Yes.
Right.
Is that too much?
Right.
No, I'm, yes. Exactly what I thought.
And you know what? I think, too, there have been examples of men who have trolled women. And, you know, I'm trying to move away from saying trolling and bullying, because, frankly, I think they're like fairy tale words. And we should really call this what it is. And it's abuse. And it's harassment.
Yes.
And in
harassment.
Some cases, it is, in fact, emotional terrorism in some cases, truly, truly, especially when large groups of people are involved with the stated goal of terrorizing another human being. But nonetheless, my train of thought just jumped. I have so many things to say at once. They're like not all coming out of my mouth. But essentially, I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, I think that confronting people often will shut them down. Confronting them with kindness will often shut them down. But very few people will actually cop to it. If you know, there's a very famous example of a writer named Lindy West who confronted someone who was harassing her by posing as her recently deceased father and saying really, really manipulative things to her while she was trying to grieve. And she confronted him. And if you Google that story, one of the first pictures you see is a picture of the two of them looking quite happy together, because they've worked it out. They found some common ground. There's a difference, though. I think there's some people that just have a disconnect and don't care, and they're just kind of having fun. And then there's some people with a stated goal of, you know, I want to shut down women's voices, or I want to shut down. I mean, that sounds so far-fetched, but in fact, there are groups. They're called men's rights activists that like have a stated goal of wanting to silence women.
Right. Well,
and one thing I wonder. Go ahead.
No, I mean, it's not, I've never doubted that that's possible, considering we do have cultures where that is part and parcel for being a part of that, you know, that community. It just is.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say was that the thing, if I'm really looking at that video very critically, and I really love it, and I really think it accomplished a very powerful thing because it was painful to watch. And you could see exactly the moment those men got it. And I almost wanted them to say, you know, gosh, this is making me really rethink some things I've said online. I don't think I've said anything this bad, but it's making me rethink, which I saw a lot of people tweeting today. I saw a lot of men say, gosh, I think I, like, in the name of smack talking, have maybe said something that could have been hurtful to somebody. I'm going to go not do that again, or I'm going to go make amends. I saw a lot of men tweeting about that, and I saw a lot of men saying, hey, let's hold each other accountable, dude. But if I'm really, really have my critic hat on, the one thing, not towards the video, but towards culture at large, that I would say is that I can't help but wonder, this video did so wonderfully today, and I was so happy to see light cast on this issue. But you know as well as I do, Patty, that this is not new, and we've been talking about this for a long time. And I can't help but wonder if those were women reading the tweets, if it would have gone quite as viral. There's something to me, I can't help but wonder, are women being believed? Are we finally saying, oh gosh, I guess it is that bad, only because men read the tweets? And I don't even want to think that, and it wouldn't matter. I mean, it doesn't really matter, and there's nothing I can do about it if that was the case, but I can't help but wonder nonetheless. Is that why suddenly the whole internet seemed to stop today and go, oh man, this is really a big deal. I'm going to change my ways. I can't help but wonder, because there has been a lot of conversation about this for a very long time, at least in the, you know, groups I'm in. I feel like we've been talking about this for several years. So why today? Why now? And I say that with...
And will it last, I think, is the other thing,
and will
too.
Will it last? Right. Will it last? And I say that with... thrilled to death to see this much light cast on it. But yeah, then there's that too. I also wonder, with so many things, the news happens, the story gets told, it blows up online, and by the next day we've moved on to something else. And then this bubbles up again and people wave their fists and say, damn it, why don't we do something? And then we don't do anything. Right. And, you know, so I wonder about that too. I mean, I wonder about kind of the bigger picture here. And again, I say that with, you know, thrilled to have seen this video today and thrilled that it exists. And I think they did a great job with that. But I hope it has some staying power.
And I hope that the work that you're doing will also have staying power. And I know that it will. Can you let people know how they can follow your journey that you are on currently?
Certainly. Well, I don't have a website for it yet because the documentary does not yet have a name. I'm waiting for one to emerge organically. But I'm making the documentary series about online harassment. The best way to keep tabs is to follow me on Twitter or Instagram. I'm at Amy Guth, G-U-T-H, on both of those platforms. And that's where I'm posting the most about the project. Of course, on Facebook also. A lot of behind-the-scenes stuff on Instagram. And, of course, on my own website, amyguth.com, I'll be posting a little bit longer updates of travels and that kind of thing as I go around collecting these interviews from all around the world, because it's really it started out as a U.S.-only project, but quickly so many stories came my way that it was very clear that it needs to be a global project. So...
And those stories are in good hands. I'm so glad that you are doing this. Can you come in studio in a couple weeks so we can hang out?
Yes,
ma'am. Talk more about, please. Again, that's Amy Guth, and she has, but one, she's embarking on an incredible journey and a task that really, I'm so proud and honored to be any part of it. But she also has the best selfies out there. I'm sorry. You just do. I really am envious of the way you do selfies. thank you so much. Follow her on Twitter and Instagram. That's Amy Guth, and we'll have her in studio in a couple weeks to catch up with her some more. More to this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Bye, Amy.